I'd like to welcome everyone to today's meeting of the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. I know a few people are moving towards their chairs, and so we'll get started. I'd like to welcome you, as I say, to this Thursday meeting of Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. I'm Luella Cronkite, and our guest today is Bill Berzins. I'll introduce him in a couple of minutes, but just a few of the housekeeping details that those of you who are here weekly know, but it's great to see so many new faces here today, and you may not know all of the details. So the first thing is that the cost for lunch and the meeting is $10, and you can place that on your tables and delegate someone at the table to ensure that everyone has paid their $10 and collected, and then the treasurer will be around to pick it up. Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs is a volunteer nonprofit organization, and of course it relies on the contributions that you make to the lunch today. It's only a very small amount of the cost of the lunch that goes to Southern Alberta Council. There are brochures of Southern Alberta Council around somewhere, and you can become a member and make a donation to that as well. I'd like to acknowledge our many partners with Southern Alberta Council. The University of Lethbridge helps us by distributing the notices, and many of you may be on their either their mailing list or their email list. If you're not, you might want to see a member of the executive at some time during the meeting to get yourself onto that list. We'd also like to thank Erickson's here for preparing lunch. They have been doing this for us for many, many years, and you know, a number of people asked me this week, so how do I register for the meeting? And I said, you just show up. And Southern Alberta and Sven Erickson figures out how many lunches to make. So the format of the meeting today is that Bill will speak for about 25 or 30 minutes. Excuse me. Thanks. Bill will speak for about 25 to 30 minutes, then we'll have lunch, and then we'll have about a half hour question period at the end. And that'll be it. So I'd like to introduce to you the topic for today, which is a very, very relevant topic, as we all know. We here in Southern Alberta live in an area where we know that water is a precious resource. We know that the population of Southern Alberta is about 80% of the province, but we only have about 20% of the province's fresh water, and this puts an incredible strain on the water resources that we have. There are many issues that are going to be coming up over the next few years that will affect how we deal with our water resources in Southern Alberta, and we have with us today our guest, Bill Berzins, who is eminently qualified to speak to this topic. Bill has been involved with water-related issues for about 25 years. He's on just about every board that you can be on in Alberta that has to do with water. You can see that he's on the Bow River Basin Council, which is one of the watershed planning and advisory councils set up under the Government of Alberta's Water for Life Act. He's a member of the Alberta Water Council, and he's also a member of the Management Advisory Board for the Alberta Water Research Institute, which is just newly minted. Some of you may know Dave Hill, who is the Executive Director, used to be with the Alberta Irrigated Projects Association, Irrigation Projects Association. So as I say, Bill is very qualified to speak to this topic. He also, his business has to do with water, and I'm sure that afterwards in the question period, if you have questions about what fossil water is, he'll be happy to fill you in on that as well. So let's welcome Bill Berzins to our meeting.
Thanks, Luella, and it's with some trepidation as an engineer that I stand in front of policy experts, but I think you all have dealt with enlightened nonlinear engineers in the past, and if you haven't, well, hopefully I can dispel some myths, but reinforce probably many others. I probably volunteer about a day and a half a week around watershed planning and protection in Alberta, working with watershed groups across the province. But today I'm speaking as an individual. I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody. So I'll say some things that may not necessarily represent the policy of the Water Council or the Research Institute, but more my perspectives as one of your neighbors that's trying to do many of the things that you're trying to do around improvement in water management in Alberta. So I have a few questions for you that I wanted to pose today. First question is trouble brewing in the watershed? And I had found a new pun I hadn't seen before around water management, trouble brewing. In 06, the provincial government reported that only two out of our six major rivers in Alberta actually met water quality standards. And the explanation was, well, we had some storm events and we had some, you know, bad spring runoff, and that's probably okay. So we sort of took a kind of a report that was a little bit condemning, and we said, well, we have a good reason for it. Freshwater quality, if you look at the latest results from across Canada, more than half the sites are marginal to poor. So here we are, a country of plenty. We're upstream of the Mackenzie Delta, the Hudson's Bay Delta. Some of you might even be upstream of the Gulf of Mexico. And so for people that are headwaters, protectors of headwaters, for a bunch of communities and ecosystems, we're not necessarily doing a very good job. The Bow and the Old Man are heavily allocated, and of course we've got declining flows in the southern river basins. There's been some very good work done by Dr. Steve Rood, for example, just locally at the University of Lethbridge, that have confirmed that coming off the eastern slopes of the Rockies, many of the streams, both up and down the Canadian and U.S. side, are experiencing a decline in flows. So we have issues around water. My observation is that we're sort of take an indirect way of dealing with it. And we sort of rely on many of you in the public policy and planning arena to figure out how are we going to get individual landowners to make a slightly better decision. So this is an aerial photograph of the Bow River Basin. I've got an intermittently working pointer, that's good. So if you look off on the left-hand side, you see the Bow River comes out of the mountains and it goes through Calgary. So there's probably about 10 to 20,000, maybe 30,000 individual landowners, and we're each trying to get one of them to make a slightly different decision about water management. And how we're doing it is we put in place Water for Life, we put in place policies, procedures, bylaws. So we're sort of taking the long way around trying to get individuals to make a slightly different decision about water, and a decision that's in our collective interest in the future. So that's one of the challenges we face. We're sort of not necessarily getting right to the nub of the issue. We're sort of hoping that policy and education will, and at the end of the day, make a difference with the individual landowners. And I think that's a challenge we face. So I thought I'd give you some perspectives on three questions today. First of all, are we managing in a sustainable manner in Alberta? Are we okay? Are we headed for trouble? Secondly, should there be a water market? We get asked that question a lot. And so our feelings, you know, our guttural instinct is that water is a right. It's a part of our life source. So how could there possibly be a market around that? So I want to talk a little bit about that. And then finally, what are we doing about it across Alberta? So first of all, are we managing in a sustainable way? Well, that's a really interesting question. We did a radio program on Wildrose probably about a year and a half ago. And I walked in the studio and the producer said, you know what I really want to talk about? I want to talk about those wasteful irrigators and how they're hogging all the water downstream, and we really need it for our growing communities. Then I thought, well, so we're going to ask the wasteful irrigators to make a decision in the best interest of 500,000 people that haven't even moved here yet. Interesting dilemma, right? So, and then you look at, if we move the 500,000 or 1 million people in, well, what's the net result on the water cycle, or what's the net result in a water balance? Well, the reality is that your diet every day takes 5,000 liters of water to sustain. Now, you're not probably drinking it all. You're probably not all bathing in that much water. But if you work back to the fact you get some of your fruit from Peru in the middle of winter, and some of your wheat may or may not be local, and some of your beef may or may not be Kobe beef, reality is that there is no absolute when it comes to what's the most acceptable and efficient use of water. So one of the clashes we see now is between communities that want to grow and the agricultural producers that are supporting those communities. And the reality is it's not clear who has the best use of water, especially when we're making decisions that we may sacrifice agricultural uses, again, for the purpose of people that haven't even been born yet in our area. If you look at per capita consumption, how are we doing? Well, if you look at the Calgary Regional Partnership, right down in the bottom right-hand corner, I have another mouse pointer. Does somebody have a mouse pointer handy? Okay. There's always, you know, if you go to a movie theater, there's always somebody who's got one on the screen. But so if you look at the Bow River Basin and you look at what individual households consume, we're not doing too bad. We're doing about 120 to 280 cubic meters a year. That's probably a world not bad compared to the rest of the world. But if you look at our overall economy for our people, we're right off the top of the chart. And so at an individual household level, we may or may not be doing a particularly good job. But certainly at the regional economy level, we're using certainly more than our fair share of water. There we go. So that's one of the challenges, is we're, on a regional basis, we're pretty high users of water. So one of the exercises I went through a couple years ago, I thought, well, what if I treated water like we treat energy or forestry in this province? Like we probably, somewhere in the halls of government, we've got a pretty good idea as to how much coal we have in the ground, our rate of extraction, how much oil and gas. Do we really have a good idea of how much water we have available and what's happening to it and what's happening to the quality? So this is about as far as I got in trying to do a balance sheet for water in Alberta. Sat down, phoned a few experts. I thought, okay, well, how much do we have sitting in the ground in our aquifers available to us? Well, I couldn't quite find an answer. How much do we have sitting in the glaciers? Well, it's not as important on the Old Man, but it's a pretty critical issue on the Bow, and so on. So we went down through all of the things that you would typically look at if you were an asset manager or a fund manager or a water manager, and quite frankly, we have a lot more questions than we have answers. Why is that important? Well, I mentioned earlier declining flows. Well, if you look in the Red Deer River or the Bow River, and there's a similar curve for the Old Man, we see a decline in flows over the last 100 years. So we have less water. The other thing that's interesting is that it's a noisier flow. So, you know, we've all seen in the last couple of years, especially 05, the big floods we had in June. Well, we're going to find that we'll have more higher floods and deeper troughs or droughts as well. So that's going to create a challenge for us to manage our water allocation and our supply accordingly. If you look at the Bow Glacier, for example, here's where it was in 1898. Here's where it was in 2002. Significant retreat. So what, in of itself, may or may not be that serious, right? Because we're still getting the snowfall and the rainfall. But what's happening is we're losing some of the buffering and the storage capacity that we rely on. So if you looked in the Bow River Basin at the glaciers, lots of numbers, but the bottom line is that in a very warm year, we lose about 80,000 acre feet of stored water that melts and runs off. So we're no longer in the balance that we were in for some time. We're now starting to dip into the bank, essentially, and the bank contains some of the water that we might want to rely on in a dry year. Groundwater. In the South Saskatchewan River Basin, we are prohibited from getting new surface water allocations. So I get a phone call about one a week from somebody saying, hey, yeah, but I've got groundwater on my site, so why don't we just develop that? And I've done a test, and it gives me enough water to support 200 homes, so let's go. Well, the irony is the Paskapoo groundwater formation that sort of runs along parallel to the mountains has already got more than 100,000 wells in it and over a very small area. And so it's an example of if you were an asset manager and a fund manager and you had 100,000 people out there with ATM cards drawing on your account, in the long run, it's hard to imagine how you would manage that effectively if you weren't monitoring and controlling each of those withdrawals. So that's one of our challenges, is we sort of said, had a tendency to say, well, let's rely on our groundwater resource to make up for our surface water resource. In fact, I met with a developer in the foothills that said to me, well, actually, we're getting our groundwater from quite deep, and my consultant says it's not connected to surface water, so you should be happy. because we're taking it out, we're using it, we're cleaning our sewage, and we're putting it into the river, so we're increasing the amount of water in the basin. And I'm thinking, oh, that doesn't quite work. I was there with the Alberta Conservation Association, the Alberta Wilderness Association, Trout Unlimited, and we're all sitting there just absolutely flabbergasted that someone would conclude that we were that ignorant about the water issue. And when we challenged him, he said, well, you know, I really should have my expert here, because that's what he says. So within Water for Life, we have a program in place by government. And Water for Life now, since it was launched, a lot of work has gone into putting in place infrastructure, partnerships, and teams and programs to start tackling the issue. The only thing we need to start doing is moving towards more measurable targets. In Water for Life, if you search for a measurable target, the one you'll find is 30% conservation and efficiency by 2015. Other than that, our objectives are primarily process-oriented. And don't get me wrong, as an engineer, I think process is everything. But the reality is that we need to also shift to a bit more of a results focus. Now, if we were somewhere else in the world, what would sustainability mean? So we've done some things in Alberta. But if you said, well, let's be the best in the world at what we're doing, there's many things that we're not doing. If you went to New York or Seattle, those communities bought their watersheds. They bought land, they secured the land, they fenced it off, they're protecting their watershed area. If you go to Australia or the Middle East or into the U.S., they're reclaiming their wastewater and they're putting it into horticulture gardens in the middle of the city or on crops that they subsequently eat. So they're working very aggressively on reuse of water. If you go to California, they're cleaning the sewage and putting it back into their drinking water aquifer so it's available for them to use 20 years from now. So there's a lot of things that are being done in other jurisdictions. We're not there yet in Alberta, and considering how important the issue is, how much growth we have, and the fact we're in an arid climate, I mean, there are parts of our basins that get less rainfall than the Sahara. So maybe we need to start moving off the process of getting there and actually get to implementing some of these things that are already accepted around the world. So to answer the question, are we managing in a sustainable way now? Well, I have questions to answer my own question. The question is, have we set ambitious targets or goals? Are we measuring how we're progressing towards them? And have we taken some corrective action already? And the answer is not a resounding yes. It is, we've sort of made progress and we're making it across multiple fronts, but I think we can't truly say we're sustainable until we have these questions better defined, or the answers better defined. A question I get faced a lot with is, should there be a water market, right? So we have obviously some evil profiteers out there in private industry that's going to make a profit on this, and it can't be right, right? So there are some perspectives on that too. If you look in the South Saskatchewan River Basin, Alberta Environment did a study and said, how much is the value of the water to our economy in southern Alberta? And of course, the biggest use is for municipal uses within the communities, agricultural and industrial. And if you add this all up, it's about $1 billion of economy directly attributed to the use of water. So it's a really key link, I guess, as it were, in terms of our economic activity. If you look at what water rights, like this is just the right to take water around North America. Well, if you look at irrigation rates within the basin, some of them you can get for about $300 per acre foot. If you look in the Bow River Basin, somewhere around $2,500 per acre foot. Does anybody prefer cubic meters to acre feet? Or does anybody like either one of those? Yeah, an acre foot is basically an acre big and a foot deep. Right? So you go, and we all, or many of you heard about the Balzac case, water from the Red Deer Basin originally proposed to go to Balzac. The Western Irrigation District sold its rights for about $7,500 per acre foot. Now you go to Nevada, it's about $10,000 now. A developer faced with bankruptcy would pay up to $50,000 on his project to the right to take water. In Arizona, there was a landmark auction just a couple months ago in which they sold the right to use treated sewage for more than we would pay for clean river water now. So the bottom line is the rights are worth somewhere between 24 cents to $41 per cubic meter, depending on where you are and how desperate you are. So a cubic meter of water could either be a quarter or it could be $40. That's one of the issues that people are really uncomfortable with, is the assumption is that we'll end up there and we're going to start sacrificing basic needs. I don't think we'll get there necessarily. And then we look at how much it costs to get it there, and we're still not paying an awful lot. So if you're looking at irrigation water and how much it costs, it's about a dollar to get a cubic meter of water. So that's a pretty good value. What's that? What would gasoline prices be for a cubic? Well, let's work that out over lunch. But so it gives you an idea that there is some actual opportunity there. So the key is to figure out those people that have a sufficiently viable business that are willing to pay for this, for water to that degree. How can we use some of that gain in protecting watersheds, improving our water treatment, and all of that? Because right now, if we don't assign a value to it, what they would be willing to pay but use for free, they pocket it, they keep it. So I look at water markets and I think, well, if it's a mechanism to get some of the wealth created from water use put towards water protection and improvement, well, then that's probably not a bad thing. Of course, that's why I'm not speaking on behalf of any agency right now, because some of you in the audience will be, well, hopefully over lunch, talking a little bit about, what did he say about water markets again? So my questions to answer the question are we happy with where we're at today in terms of our water, our current market? And I don't think we are. I think there's a lot of angst about it. So we don't have a water market, and we're unhappy with where we're at. So let's not necessarily discount that a market might solve some problems. If we don't have a market, would we take some of the actions to conserve and preserve water for another use? I'm not sure we would necessarily voluntarily do that. And then, will the electorate allow elected officials and planning officials to make some of the tough choices that need to get made if the market doesn't make the choices? And I'm not sure, I think all of you know how difficult it would be to make a decision that's in our collective best interest around watershed protection for the next 100 years. I don't think you'd get a lot of votes for that if it meant you made a decision against allowing a new industry and jobs. So I think that the water market is part of a more complex issue, which is how are we going to take some of the actions that are required in improvement in water management. So the third question, and I'm going to race through this piece, is what are we doing about it? And the thankful thing is that we're doing a lot. Thank you. There are a lot of things going on, and I want to give you a glimpse of some of them. So what are the developers doing? Well, the developers that can't get water in the Bow River Basin are racing ahead with community plans that look like the community of the future. So out of desperation and out of need, they're doing some things that might take us tens of years to get implemented in some of our communities if we ask people to change the way they live and work and use water. So low-impact development, small, using less water, reclaiming wastewater or sewage for irrigation, capturing stormwater and using it in our fire flows, metering consumption, and I don't mean a meter that says, well, you used 50 cubic meters last month, but a meter that says, do you know that every day between 4 and 8 o'clock, all of your neighbors and you are using a pile of water for your washing and your cooking and your dishwashers, which means that we have to build everything, every piece of pipe between you and the river, and overbuild it by 25%. We have to build bigger treatment plants. We have to treat more sewage at peak and not quite as cleanly. So the metering that we're starting to see planned in communities would allow you, even at the end of a week, to press a button and look at what you used and when during the whole week and start to think about how could I cut back on that and be a bit smarter about how I use water. Luella mentioned watershed planning and advisory councils. There's a number of you that are involved in the Old Man Basin Council. Many of us across Alberta are working as volunteers to try and come up with watershed plans and plans that will change the way communities are built, the way decisions and industry uses water. So if you went across the list, and by the way, if anybody wants to send me an email and get a copy of this presentation later, please feel free. And then you can read all the gory detail. So we have across Alberta a collection of watershed planning groups all the way from the Athabasca to the South Saskatchewan, right in the bottom southeast corner of the province, that are very active on planning, setting objectives, reporting on the state of the basins. So this represents across Alberta something of the order of between, I'm going to guess, 500 to 2,000 volunteers that are sort of beavering away at producing these watershed plans, working with their neighbors around improved water management practices. So that's a very good thing. The Bow Council, as an example, we've actually said we want to be the best managed basin in the world. Okay, and that's sort of, all the other WPACs tell me, well, that's kind of, that's a little bit aloof, that's a little bit crude or whatever it is. And I just sort of rationalize it by saying, you know what, we've got the wealthiest population, the most highly educated population, the strongest economy, all this brain power, all these motivated volunteer groups. If we can't do it as good as anybody in the world, then you need to find somebody else to help volunteer and participate in it. So we're doing lots of things to try and improve our water quality within our basin. And why is that important? Well, ultimately, the Bow and the Old Man and the Red Deer flow together. And so somebody downstream benefits or doesn't benefit from what we do collectively. The Alberta Water Council, and there may be some questions on this after lunch. The Alberta Water Council just became an independent advisory body. So it was Dr. Taylor, when he was Minister of Environment, created it. Well, now it's independent of government. And so the Water Council is looking at a variety of important areas to try and improve policy, make specific recommendations. So we're looking at wetlands. We're looking at conservation, efficiency, and productivity of the use of water. Shared governance. We're spending some time on intrabasin transfers. There may be a question or two about that during the break. So the Water Council is a collection of 26 volunteers that are looking at issues across the province, and especially the issues as to how they tie together watersheds and individual watershed planning groups. The Research Institute. I mentioned earlier Dr. Lauren Taylor. Well, Dr. Taylor is the chair of the Water Research Institute. And the number one focus for him in the Institute is that good science will support good policy. So that's the focus of the Institute. So they have initiatives underway to look at the Water for Life goals the province has, and also some of the produced water from oil and gas and oil sands, and looking at the beneficial use of that. Water portal. Many of us got together about a year ago and said, you know, people can't seem to find the information they need about water. Where would you go to find out what watershed I'm in? Who's got a plan? What's the criteria that I need to meet? What's the landscape like? How do I make the right decisions? So we created the Alberta Water Portal to create a new dialogue about water. In a partnership between the Bow Council, IBM, Suncor, we said, you know what, a lot of people are now increasingly relying on the internet as a way to get information. We need to create a site that everybody can use in Alberta. Wetland Trust. We've established a wetland trust, a wetland trust that will allow us to build a compensation bank. So we've said, you know, there's activity already around wetlands restoration in the province. Let's make a business around that restoration and try and raise the visibility of the issues and improve our performance. Water Conservation Trust of Canada. A number of us established the trust as a mechanism to get water rights solely for the purpose of leaving the water in the river for the benefit of ecology and downstream communities. So there's activity underway in that regard. So the answers from a policy standpoint, you know, and again, I have lots of questions, maybe raised a few questions with you as well. But I think the key for us is going to be three things. We need to start planning for the next 100 years or more. We don't really inherit the earth so much as we're just borrowing it from the future. Now, that's been an overused phrase, but we need to make some decisions that are irreversible. So, for example, in Alberta, in the riparian zones, 30% of our riparian zone, or the zone right along the river, will not be repaired or restored in our grandchildren's lifetime. So we've lost a bunch. Now we have to make a decision about the 50% that hang in the balance. Well, we're not going to see the benefits in the short term, but they're going to be crucial for our grandchildren's grandchildren. Secondly, we have to look at some more innovative partnership models so we can look at more solutions. We have a lot of individual partnerships out there, watershed planning groups, industry associations, but we've got to come up with some models that get some of the wealth that's created that we may make a decision about, does it go into healthcare, does it go in education, or does it go into the next 100 to 200 years of sustainability? We need to start having that dialogue, and I think it's going to be some of the partnerships that are going to have that dialogue. And then finally, we need to start acting in collective interest as well. Don't assume that the decision about watershed protection or wetland protection is only the decision of the landowner to make when they're faced with an opportunity to subdivide and sell. It's really maybe our collective decision to start making it worthwhile for individuals to make choices that are in our collective best interest. So there you have it, a bunch of questions. I answered some questions with a question, and I expect to get challenged on that maybe after lunch. But most of all, I appreciate your interest in the issue and the work that you're doing on trying to tackle these issues, because we're going to have to do it together. It's not going to come down to, you know, just what us brilliant engineers, can I say that and be unchallenged? But it's more about how do we change how society looks at these issues and how do we start acting in collective interest. So thanks again for your interest, and I'm sure we'll have some lively discussion after lunch. And if you want to send me an email and get a PDF of the presentation, just make a note of my email address and I'll be happy to get it to you. Some of the new community plans, they're looking at cisterns for the purpose of on-site water storage and also fire flows. So we are now starting to, some of the new communities and estates plan for storage of water. And So regarding the cisterns, we're actually starting to look and to use more of that. The situation on the Red Deer is an international issue, and I'm familiar with it, or on the Red River, rather. I'm familiar with it, but not expert enough to render an opinion. Is it okay if I have one question like that in a Q&A? rather than make something up? But we can talk about that afterward. I went to a specialty conference on it, but it's very complex.
80% or 90%?
It's debatable if I'm up to 10 sometimes, so...
Our time is up. We'll take one last question. Is that all right?
My name is Jürgen Borchers, and I was wondering if there's any legislative initiative to norm the industry to supply water-efficient supplies for home use, like water-efficient toilets.
And maybe you know the answer better in Lethbridge. I know in Calgary there are preferred suppliers and rebate programs available from, and I think it's the city administrators as well as the manufacturers, and they would allow you to get a rebate for the purchase of a low-flow fixture or toilet. In fact, I looked at that. My brother lives in Invermere, and I looked at whether we could introduce a program like that in Invermere, and, you know, we've had some discussions with the manufacturer about doing that. So there are some programs available, and that's another example of something that can be done at the individual homeowner scale. What was interesting was about a year ago, we did a program on wild rose about conservation at the home level, and then a lot of people phoned in and complained that they used to have washing machines that would take the rinse cycle, park it, and use it in the wash cycle, and you can't get that apparently anymore. It's really kind of interesting, right? Because it's sort of like what's old is new again, and we either do that with small cisterns and storage in the individual home, or we look at new generation of products that would allow us to do that.
Well, I'd sure like to thank Bill Berzins for coming today. He made some accommodations in his schedule to accommodate us. I got an email today that was timed 4:37 a.m. So thank you very much. And as Bill said, we can get his PowerPoint presentation from him by emailing him. I have his email address. Maybe I will pass that on to Trevor Page, and if anyone wants this PowerPoint, they can get it. So thank you very much for coming. We'll see you next week.